It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the United Methodist Church loses nearly a quarter of its total churches in recent years, according to a new report from the Lewis Center for Church Leadership, we examine the difficult decisions that Wisconsin congregations confront, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Reverend Brian Gilbert is Prairie South District Superintendent for the Northern Illinois Conference of the United Methodist Church. Reverend Gilbert, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You say three communities from your district have chosen to disaffiliate from the church. What is that process like? Can you walk us through it?
Yes. So, the first thing to understand in all of this is the United Methodist Church, unlike many other denominations, is what's called a connectional system, which means no church stands independently of their own. We all work together as a movement, and our basic building block for our denominational structure is something called an annual conference, which is a geographic area that meets once a year, why it's called an annual conference of clergy and laity that are the people that actually establish churches and send them out missionally, create new churches. And so once every 4 years, something called General Conference happens, which is where delegates from all over the world come together and create a rule book called the Book of Discipline. And in 2019, there was a paragraph added to the Book of Discipline called 2553. That's the paragraph number that allowed churches to disaffiliate or leave the denomination. Now, it set up a process that each annual conference was told to implement and could add to or create their own process in which churches could discern and vote to leave. So I'm in Northern Illinois Conference, so I'm just to the south of you all. And our process is a little different from how the churches in Wisconsin went through the process. But one of the things we did in this process is we wanted to make sure that as churches were considering if they wanted to leave or not, that we gave them as much information as we could and be as fair as we could in this process. And so when churches were inquiring about leaving, we met with them multiple times before they had a congregational vote to decide if they wanted to disaffiliate. And we discussed three different things. The first thing we talked with them about was their own congregational history, who they were as a church, where they came from, what their triumphs were, what their struggles were. The second thing we talked about was this is the denomination's history, theology, polity, just who we are as United Methodists. And the third thing was just the nuts and bolts of when you disaffiliate, there are certain, and you leave the denomination, there are certain things the denomination have been doing for the church legally. And talk through all the different things that a congregation has to do to incorporate, both within the state of Illinois, but also for the federal government to be a religious 501c3, because we didn't want churches to be unprepared for that, if that makes sense. Because there's a lot of legal things that need to happen that individual congregations, the United Methodist Church, hadn't had to do on their own before. And so if a church was in the process of leaving, we wanted them to have as full of a picture as possible so they weren't caught off guard and had the best chance to survive, because we don't want churches to falter.
To disintegrate or break apart further after a vote that can be, you know, certainly can split an individual congregation. And I'm wondering, Reverend Gilbert, you know, 2019, very much in the rearview mirror, but is the topic of exiting or disaffiliation now behind the United Methodist Church?
Well, if I could look in that crystal ball, I could write a book and retire tomorrow, probably. yes and no. I mean, it's a little bit of both. So the specific paragraph to 2553 had included on it a sunset clause. So when the legislation was written and passed in 2019, it had attached to it a timeline that said by the end of December 2023, this paragraph in the Book of Discipline will no longer be usable. So church is exiting underneath this book, this paragraph, right now has stopped, because we're in 2024 now. Now the General Conference is going to be meeting in 2024, and they can change things if the delegates that go wanted to change things, they could. There are also and have always been provisions in the Book of Discipline for if a congregation wanted to leave, in a way that a congregation could exit the denomination, does exist in the Book of Discipline. It's just not designed to be as expedited as 2553 was.
I just want to pause right here with Reverend Brian Gilbert, a district superintendent for the United Methodist Church's Northern Illinois Conference, as we talk about the historic schism. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org for questions and comments. Dan in Madison is here. Dan, go ahead.
Hi, Kate and Reverend Gilbert. I'm a member of a reconciling church, which means we're open. Our motto is all means all. And we want to bring open to all people of different sexual orientations. And we've been doing that for years. And I think it's one of the, there's sort of this secret, almost under the table recognition. I mean, I've been at churches where there's been gay clergy in the Methodist Church, but there's always been a minority faction that wants to keep with the Book of Discipline, which was written, my understanding, in the 60s and 70s, that says the practice of homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teachings. And I think the Methodists have been kind of slow. Lutherans, United Church of Christ, and other mainline Protestants have had this discussion painful and have moved on, and we're kind of just behind the curve.
And Dan, I want to stop you there and have Reverend Gilbert respond. Behind the curve, slow to respond. Go ahead, Reverend.
No one could ever say a church is not slow to respond to things, right? Churches, we'll fight over changing the color of the carpet, right, in our congregations. The United Methodist Church, he's absolutely right. In 1968, the United Methodist Church was formed. It was in 1972 that the restrictive language was added at the first General Conference of the United Methodist Church, which combined two different denominations at the time. And the United Methodist Church has been arguing and fighting with itself over this ever since. The reconciling movement was started to promote open and affirming churches that accept all LGBTQIA persons into clergy, and that has been gaining popularity among a lot of churches and a lot of conferences in Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois is what would be considered by me to be a reconciling conference. We have traditionalist churches that don't want to perform same-sex marriages, and we have congregations that are reconciling that do. My hope is that at the end of the day, we can all sit around one large table and disagree, but still respect and love one another and affirm our common humanity and dignity, and work to in some of the things in the world that we disagree with, like child hunger or war or homelessness, to work together to end some of these things rather than expend our energy fighting with each other over matters of scriptural interpretation, that there is room for us to disagree and still respect one another and love one another.
Reverend Gilbert, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Reverend Brian Gilbert is Prairie South District Superintendent for the Northern Illinois Conference of the United Methodist Church. And this conversation continues. You can be part of it. Call in with a question. Share your perspective. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As thousands of United Methodist Church congregations choose to leave the denomination in recent years, including dozens here in Wisconsin, we examine the complex issues of disaffiliation and the shifts in the mainline Protestant denomination. And you can call in with a question. You can share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Stan Pegram is lead pastor of BMZ Church in Boscobel. Pastor Pegram, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Kate.
So last year in February, your congregation chooses to leave the United Methodist Church. Can you explain why?
Yes, I think it was, it was probably years in the making and some difficulties, but as Brian mentioned, the 2019 General Conference seemed to be that tipping point because the reason, if I can just, I'll start with the reason that we left was more a breach of trust. As Brian said, we have a large table that we sit at. We have many theological viewpoints. And I served on many conference committees and boards, and we made that work. We worked hard at it, and it was difficult at times. There were times that we understood that we agreed to disagree at those tables, and we cared for each other. We respected each other for the most part. And so why disaffiliate? What was that tipping point? Well, for us, it was after the United Methodist Church is set up. In big picture, it's set up as a democracy where we have delegates. As Brian mentioned, we have a general conference every 4 years. We have delegates who represent the people in the pews all from all over the world. And they come together and make decisions and set policy. And here's the direction we're going to go. And here's how we're going to do things. Mm. And then after that, I think, I don't think there was a disagreement, at least with many on our Council of Bishops. So it's set up like a democracy, but we don't have a president. Mm-hmm. We have a council of bishops that helps guide us, and they agree. I mean, we're all in a covenant agreement with each other as how we're going to conduct ourselves. But after that, I know my bishop and then a number of other bishops, because they did not like how the vote went in the 2019 Special General Conference, they invited, and I received, communication that it would be okay to do civil disobedience and we could go against what we had all decided. Well, when we have that breach of trust and we've found out that we don't have checks and balances in place anymore and we can't govern ourselves and there's really not an accountability and now each church can do whatever it wants, well, we're not much of a United Methodist Church anymore. And so that was kind of the tipping point for us to say, listen, if we can't govern ourselves, none of us really want to be part of an organization like that. So, we had our theological conversations and et cetera, but it really boiled down to, it's hard to sit at that table and continue to have those conversations when we're not sure what the other person's going to do, we're not going to continue to do. Oh, what we've agreed to do.
Yeah. What was the vote like in your congregation? How did that feel?
It was difficult most of the people I serve multiple smaller congregations. And most of them grew up in the United Methodist Church as I did. And so I think there was grieving. It was difficult. My dad was a pastor in the United Methodist Church from its inception back in the late 60s. I was a little kid. All I can remember is a cross in flame. And so to make those decisions was not easy, but it was worth having the conversation. I appreciate our conference. And it was challenging. We had a 17-step process to go through to disaffiliate, but we had to have the conversations. We had to talk about what we believe and why we believe it, and does this make sense for us? And but Kate, by the time it came to the vote, it was almost unanimous in each one of our. So I have six congregations that I serve. At that time, I had six. And so each one of those churches had to make their own decision in how they would move forward. So I'm part of that conversation, and but each one of them was unanimous. Our larger church, with 70 plus voters, we had a couple that said, you know, we'd rather not disaffiliate, but it was almost unanimous.
There is the movement among disaffiliated communities to join the Global Methodist Church. Your church is one that joined. Why join another organization after leaving the United Methodist Church?
For me, as their pastor, I'm still Methodist at heart. And connectionalism, as Brian mentioned earlier, matters. I think we are better together when we can partner with other churches and continue to reach into different communities. I just think that's important. Like I said, I grew up in the Methodist world, and it felt like that's what, you know, the Global Methodist Church was putting into place, what I kind of thought I agreed to when I became part of the United Methodist Church and was ordained in the United Methodist Church. And so it's a fledgling organization. You know, we're only about 18, 20 months old. And there's been a lot of work to try to build that as we go forward, but it feels like there's more alignment, if that makes sense. And I'm praying that in the United Methodist Church, there's more alignment, and we're not as divided, and they can continue to be the church that God's calling them to be, and feel like we're in a place in the Global Methodist Church that we can be the church that God's calling us to be.
Stan Pegram, lead pastor of BMZ Church in Boscobel, as we talk about dozens of Wisconsin churches leaving the United Methodist Church. You can join in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Pastor Pegram, in order to leave, it required communities to meet certain financial obligations, like covering all the debts and pensions. How challenging has that been to meet those financial obligations?
It was incredibly challenging. You know, we kind of knew something was coming, and so when we could, we would set aside finances and create accounts where we could be prepared as we could, because we knew a split was coming at some point or something was going to happen. We just didn't know what it was going to look like. But to come out of that trust clause with the United Methodist Church, and as you know, there were challenges, and like I said, I appreciate the conference making sure. I'll go back to Brian, because he said, you know, we had to put certain things in place so that legally it could happen and they would be covered, and so all that was put in place in Wisconsin as well. The cost for many churches in our conference, I believe, was prohibitive. I think some were wanting to disaffiliate but could not afford it. It was difficult for us. It's difficult to convince congregants, even though they've been in the Methodist Church all their lives, that we have to pay to have the buildings that we've already paid for. We have to pay to have the finances that we've already contributed to. And those are challenging conversations, but we were able to work our way through it, like I said, a lot of conversations, a lot of work to be done to get there.
And
But felt like it was worth it for us.
the United Methodist Church reconvening for its first conference since 2019, happening later this spring, would your church consider returning, depending on what happens at the conference?
I don't think so. I think we are in a place where the Global Methodist Church feels like it's moving in a good direction. We're invested there now.
In what way?
Well, we are now paying in apportionments. I serve as leader in our conference, one of the leaders in our conference. We're trying to care for other churches around us that are Global Methodist. And we're trying, you know, putting together ministries that we can do together. Like I said, it's a fledgling organization. We're young. and we're kind of putting it together as we go. Something about, building the plane as you fly it. So I think, our time and our energy and things are headed in that direction. And how do we help this? How do we as local congregations help a new conference and a new denomination move forward?
Pastor Pegram, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Stan Pegram is lead pastor of BMZ Church in Boscobel, and there's room to talk about faith communities and tensions in belief systems. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. United Methodist churches have had an opening to leave the denomination over disputes involving same-sex marriage and gay clergy. More than 40 congregations have disaffiliated in Wisconsin, according to a new report from the Lewis Center for Church Leadership. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can add your views at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kathy Wiegand is lead pastor at First United Methodist Church in Madison. Reverend Wiegand, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much.
And Krista Deedy is here, lead pastor of Onalaska United Methodist Church. Reverend Deedy, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Reverend Deedy, let's start with you. As we see roughly a quarter of Methodist churches choosing to leave, according to this new report, and Wisconsin Conference approving 43 disaffiliations. What effect is this process having on the Wisconsin Methodist community?
It was a very trying experience to watch congregations and clergy who had had relationships over many years say goodbye to one another, especially when many of the congregation members were not fully on board with the decision to disaffiliate. It was interesting to see that 43% of the membership for those that disaffiliated made the decision for the other 53%.
I wonder, Reverend Wiegand, what thoughts come up to you as you watch this process?
I think for me, the process was extensive in such a way, it was done with such care and consideration, but it took so much time and energy and resources, and that's hard because the church has so much work to do in being in the world and loving people and offering grace and hospitality in meaningful ways, and to pause to do the work of disaffiliation really made a difference for a time in how the local churches I served in anyway could engage ministry.
How much consensus is there among your members to stay? What have you heard?
I've served in two churches through this process. I was serving in Oshkosh and moved to Madison this summer. Both congregations are reconciling congregations and have had meaningful conversations for years about what it means to be open and affirming and to celebrate queer people in the life of the church, to include them in every possible way. So for those congregations, conversations happened in good and healthy ways, but because of the history of those churches, there was never really a question about what direction they would go. They want change in the United Methodist Church. They want the laws that discriminate that are in the Book of Discipline to come out. And our hope is that in the 2024 General Conference, that will finally happen in a meaningful way and can shift fully how we live together as congregations that are part of the United Methodist Church.
Reverend Deedy, how has this global process of disaffiliation affected membership at churches?
I would say that I've served two congregations, one that was very more conservative, and when the topic of inclusion of queer people was presented after our 2019 General Conference, it was very apparent that the congregation was against inclusion. And so that was a very painful process to experience with them. And then I recently was moved to the Unalaska Church, where they too are a reconciling congregation. And so that has been a blessing to see the difference between the two. I would say that despite the position as a reconciling congregation versus a non-reconciling congregation, that those people who were in the camp of agree to disagree are still deciding whether or not that they can stay in a congregation that becomes fully reconciling.
Oh, so there still is those tensions. I also wonder, you know, the Global Methodist Church has added thousands of congregations in this process. How is it a departure from the United Methodist Church?
They have a very particular understanding of reading scripture in a much more literal interpretation. They claim to be a completely fresh and new expression of Methodism. However, when you look at their Book of Discipline, which is it's the similar type to what our Book of Discipline is, and the way they practice, essentially they just changed a few things and are essentially operating very similarly to United Methodists. So other than the literal interpretation of scripture, they're operating very similarly to the United Methodist Church.
Krista Deedy is lead pastor at Unalaska United Methodist Church. Kathy Wiegand with us, lead pastor at First United Methodist Church in Madison, as we talk about this historic split in the church. And you can join in. Questions and comments along the way. 800-642-1234. Wendy in Oconomowoc is here. Hi, Wendy. Go ahead.
Hi. In 2019, our church in Oconomowoc, we had meetings. We went through this. We educated the congregation as to what the upcoming changes were, and we unanimously decided to stay with the United Methodist Church. Your previous guest, who seemed to be skirting around the issue, talking about like individual rights, kind of reminds me of the Civil War, where they didn't want to talk about slavery. They talked about states' rights. Very similar. And we in the United Methodist Church actually had a division at that time too, and healed from it. So I really think that a lot of these churches are using that as an excuse. The global church, my understanding, and the pastor probably from Madison probably knows more about this than me, but that the global church is more discriminating against LGBTQ people than the American church.
Wendy, thank you. I want Reverend Wiegand to respond. Go ahead.
I think it's interesting that she raised the Civil War and issue of slavery because the church split North and South during that time, and it took 95 years to come back together. So interestingly, or sadly, the United Methodist Church has a history going back to our very beginnings about church split over ideologies and theologies and practices. So at some point, this isn't new to us, although it is new to how we live currently in the system. I don't know how we think ahead other than to say we're deeply committed to loving God and loving all of our neighbors and offering grace and hope wherever and however we can. And to do that work as congregations together in our communities with the hope of having impact for people who have been marginalized and oppressed and left out and discriminated against. It is our hope as the United Methodist Church that we can focus our time and our energy on those things.
Reverend Wiegand, why can't there be differences between congregations surrounding LGBTQ plus inclusion?
The beauty of the United Methodist Church is that one of the things we use is called the Wesleyan Quadrilateral, where we say scripture is our primary source. But when we're thinking about our life and how we feel about things and how we frame our faith, we also add into it tradition and reason and experience, which means there isn't a lot of black and white. We wrestle with our faith as individuals and as congregations. So how we engage it can be different without question. I think for this particular instance, since the Book of Discipline says currently that queer clergy, queer people cannot be ordained in the United Methodist Church, that it is not legal for us to do same gender wedding ceremonies. And many of us were choosing to break the rules and live in defiance of those rules for reasons we felt were incredibly important. As you heard Stan say earlier, there was a difference in how we wanted the legislation of that and in the judicial part of that to play out.
Mm. Reverend Didi, on Alaska, what's next for your communities as part of the United Methodist Church and as you look ahead?
For us, we continue to preach the good news, to invite people to know that they are beloved, that there is a place for them in the church, and that there can be healing for circumstances that, you know, not long ago, they were feeling rejected by the church because they weren't sure whether the church would accept them for who they are. And so there's a lot of reconciliation happening with people who are realizing that we really are inclusive and supportive and excited for the gifts and graces that they bring to our congregational life, and that their thoughts about how to reach people for Jesus Christ is so important. So that making space for people to really be themselves is what Unalaska is focusing on right now.
Reverend Krista Didi and Reverend Kathy Wiegand, they lead United Methodist congregations in Onalaska and Madison, respectively. Call in with a question. You can share your comments along the way at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the United Methodist Church divides along lines of progressive and traditional theological values, we hear from two Wisconsin pastors on the complexities of disaffiliation and finding home in a faith community. Call in with a question. You can add your perspective, 800-642-1234. We have Reverend Kathy Wiegand, who leads First United Methodist Church in Madison, and Reverend Krista Didi, who leads Onalaska United Methodist Church. Reverend Didi, you're one of the clergy who will be representing Wisconsin in the upcoming General Conference in the spring. What are your priorities for the international meeting?
Interestingly, the focus will be on the regionalization of practice so that churches that are across the globe can contextualize their ministry and do and care for people in a way that makes sense to that particular context. We have been working diligently to solidify our social principles. Right now, we have a very large volume that shares all of the things that we value and hold deeply in our faith tradition, and they are making them more concise, so that there isn't confusion when it is practiced across the globe. And then finally, the other priority is to remove the harmful language in the Book of Discipline, which is contradictory in terms of saying that every person is of great value. However, if you are an LGBTQ person, somehow you are not necessarily valued in the same way. And so the hope is to accomplish all three of those very large and complicated issues as we move into our general conference.
Reverend Wiegand, as you watch the General Conference and that last piece there of what Reverend Didi said, the harmful language, do you think that the conference can come to some type of agreement, some type of level understanding?
Well, I think the votes will shift in some way, so there is some hope for movement. The other piece is simply that, and Krista alluded to this too, the church has caused such significant and often irreparable harm to the queer community. You know, we know those stories from the media. We've heard those stories from our queer siblings. So my hope is that the general church can do that hard work of moving forward and extending radical welcome and full inclusion in every aspect of the church in all of the ways that we can, so that some healing from some of that trauma can begin to happen, because it's been decades.
The Board of Wisconsin's United Methodist Conference says sexual orientation and gender identity are insufficient reasons to deny someone's call to ministry. What makes someone a quality pastor?
Krista and I both serve on the Board of Ordained Ministry, who worked very hard and for days to draft that statement, to let people know that sexual orientation and gender identity were not reasons in and of themselves to say no to someone who wanted to come into ministry. If we're looking for what makes a healthy pastor, we're looking for someone who's well-educated, who can speak theology in a way that speaks to people and the realities of their lives. We're looking for someone who is spiritually growing, someone who is mentally healthy, someone who can lead well. We go through a big process in the United Methodist Church to ordain people. And there are so many facets of what it takes to be ordained. For us who have witnessed queer clergy doing amazing work, it is heartbreaking to see how many people have left ministry or never came into ministry because they were unwilling to live with that kind of discrimination or to live a closeted life. Mm-hmm. And if we can remove some of those barriers and let God work through people who are gifted and called, that is our hope.
Let's bring on Mark in Wauwatosa. Mark, what would you like to share?
Hi. Yeah, I was a member of a UMC. I left my family. We left this year. I don't know, we might come back. It was a reconciling congregation. We were longtime members. Just a personal struggle. You know, didn't like the way the vote went a few years back to become reconciling. I always felt that the term radical hospitality was, I don't know, a bit radical. And last week, the pastor spoke of heterosexualism while talking about isms as schisms, I don't know, that sounded kind of radical. But I think it's been a strategic blunder that has cost the church greatly. More people have avoided coming or avoided joining than, and some have left. And I don't know, that's just my personal struggle with that. That's all.
Mark, thank you for calling in. Reverend Didi in Onalaska, what comes up for you?
I'm hearing Mark share his witnesses, something that many congregations have wrestled with, because we, as United Methodists, consider ourselves to be a wide tent for different theologies and understandings of how Scripture informs us personally and collectively. I can appreciate, because I've heard from my own congregation members who are among those who are, you know, voted no when the reconciliation process was completed, that they've decided to stay, but that sometimes they feel as if some of the ways that we try to create hospitality for people kind of offends them in some ways. For an example, when I introduce myself, I will use my pronouns as a way for people to know that it is important and an act of hospitality for especially transgender people to know that they are really welcome and that we celebrate and make space for things that will be those cues to them, that we're not just a sign on the door. When they walk in, they will experience something different than what they have before. And so I can appreciate Mark's struggle with hearing things that seem radical to his theology and his experience. And all I would invite people who are going through a similar thing to do is sometimes I believe that's God inviting us to dig into why that is bothersome mm-hmm. for us and to gain a greater understanding of what is it that's triggering this and what can I learn or what can I use the quadrilateral as Kathy outlined to help me to understand why I'm having this response.
And Reverend Wiegand, in our final moments together, does the conflict have you revisiting any Christian stories or teachings?
I think for me, maybe the most important one from the Gospel of Luke, there was an expert in religious law who asked Jesus what he was supposed to be doing in life. And it came around to the idea that our job is to love God and to love our neighbors. And so the lawyer said, "Who's my neighbor?" And so the reflection on who's my neighbor was the story told about the Good Samaritan, which brought in someone who was very different, someone who was unexpectedly the hero of the story. I think it reminds us that our neighbors are people we might not expect. And we have to be looking for God's presence in each and every person we meet. And if we can do that well, we begin to make a difference as the Holy Spirit engages people in new and loving and grace-filled ways.
Reverend Wiegand and Reverend Didi, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
That is Reverend Krista Didi of Onalaska United Methodist Church and Reverend Kathy Wiegand of First United Methodist Church in Madison. And earlier, we spoke with Pastor Stan Pegram of BMZ Church in Boscobel and Reverend Brian Gilbert of the Northern Illinois Conference of the United Methodist Church. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.